so far from the 414 is, I'm confused. I thought Trump was only interested in revoking green cards. Ba-dum-ba.
Broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at the Avenue in downtown Milwaukee. Let's start the week by going up front to get the latest on Wisconsin politics statewide with Channel 12 political director Matt Smith on Point Taken.
Happy Monday after a long weekend. Steve's having an even longer weekend by taking today, too. He'll be back tomorrow.
Smart decision.
I know.
I kind of like that Monday off after because you can kind of reset.
It can be your Sunday.
You can do your laundry.
I know.
You can sleep.
I'm a big fan of the four-day work week. I feel like life would be very different if you had 3 days instead of 2 days to do the weekend. Because one could be a fun day. One could be an errand day.
And then one, I'm all in.
And rest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we're here. It's Monday.
We're here. We showed up.
Yeah.
You and I showed up to work. So take that. All right, Matt Smith. Actually, good weekend?
Yeah, great weekend. Weather was beautiful. Out on the lake, fireworks, boating, everything.
Great. Actually, I'm going to ask this later on the show.
Yeah.
How old were your kids when you let them stay up late enough to see fireworks?
Okay, I'll have to think about that. That's a good question.
Because we were with friends in the afternoon on Saturday.
It was probably pretty young.
And my friend said, am I a bad mom that my 5-year-old has never seen fireworks? And I held my tongue because my 2-year-old was definitely going to go see the fireworks that night.
I was going to say infant. Yeah. I mean, they were so young at one point. We put the earmuffs, not the earmuffs. You know what I'm trying to say. Noise canceling.
Yeah, noise canceling.
There
headphones.
We go. Yeah, we got those. Yeah.
So you just were like, screw bedtime. We'll deal with the aftermath and the consequences of this tomorrow.
Totally.
So that's the kind of
my parent. My wife is the fun one. So she's all about let's have fun. Let's live life. They'll sleep in. They'll be fine. They'll survive.
Way to own that.
Yeah.
Way to own that your wife is the fun one.
Yeah, she is.
All right. So let's start. as much as we celebrated this weekend, it sounds like the 250th is not necessarily over, that there's more celebrations planned across Wisconsin?
Yeah, across Wisconsin. I guess some little known facts. We kind of talked a lot about the 250th on Upfront on Sunday in various different stories, but there is an actual Wisconsin commission as part of the America 250 celebrations that participated and helped in all the national events, whether you looked at the state fair in DC, the time capsule, and events happening all around the state. And the state commission just kind of wants to incorporate this 250th celebration this entire year. So there's going to be booths and events at the state fair and other events as we kind of go forward. And this weekend now is coming to an official end.
I got it. Because you had Chris Kowalski, who's the chair of Wisconsin's America 250 Commission, on the show this weekend. So let's hear from him.
The celebrations and events, they really continue past this holiday weekend. You talk about the commission really working for about 5 years on this. I mean, these are celebrations that will continue past this holiday weekend all throughout the year.
That's right. And that's one of the things we've been real strong about is this. It started in 2025 with the birthdays of the military and the beginning of the revolution, the anniversary of the beginning of the revolution. And then 2026 is the entire birthday year. State Fair is going to have elements of 250th. The Summerfest obviously is going to have elements. We're looking already to how we make America 250 and the 25th of 9/11 this September, Veterans Day. The commission goes through January 1st of next year.
There you go. Which I think is great.
Yeah. And the commission.
Because it shouldn't be more than just one day.
And the commission bipartisan set up by the legislature a number of years ago. So there have been years of planning that have gone into all of these events that we've seen in celebrations across the state.
Got it. All right. So then you also had Representative Glenn Grothman on talking about the status of Ripon.
Yeah.
And Ripon's having the national landmark status for their little white schoolhouse, which I got to see when it was here. At the RNC.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I got to take some pictures with
it. Yeah.
I didn't know that, how many different places do you think that thing travels every year? They just take it around? Is it in Ripon's parade every year, you think?
No, it's, did the actual schoolhouse come here? Or was it a replica?
It might be a replica.
It was probably a replica.
Okay.
Because the real one
is very old.
Yeah. Has moved about 6 or 7 times.
Okay.
And we went out to visit it and kind of did a piece on just the history of it. And the history of Wisconsin and that meeting in Ripon and the significance of it in terms of the birth of the Republican Party, as all these meetings were happening across the North. But to the point of the landmark status, it moved a couple years ago to a more commercial location that they're hoping to attract more visitors, make it more of a destination. And folks in Ripon and the delegation was told at the time, because of the move, which apparently the National Park Service doesn't really like when you move these national landmarks, that it was going to lose its national landmark status. So there's been all of this, like, there's all this controversy, and a lot of people got fired up over that and were angry with the move. And there was a lot of friction in Ripon over this move several years
ago. Friction in Ripon.
Yeah. So come to find out, literally just last week, as we were putting the final touches on this story, on the piece about the Little White Schoolhouse, Congressman Grothman, who's been kind of leading this effort for the delegation, found out that he got a letter from the federal government saying, oh, well, actually, the national landmark status was never removed, so nothing to see here. All good. The status remains. So a very joyous 250th. And no one really knows where it came from, because people in Ripon, the delegation, I mean, there were letters that said the status is going to be lost when you move this schoolhouse.
But they moved it anyways.
They moved it.
But then there was no follow through on the status actually being lost.
And there was. And they were told it was lost, but now they're told it wasn't lost. So here we are.
Sounds like a lot of...
To Congressman Grothman's point, he's like, we're done asking questions. If they say it, if it's there, it's there. We're done. We're moving on. And it's there.
All right, let's hear from Congressman Grothman.
This process on the national status, it kind of went on for a couple years. Do you have any indication where the confusion was from the federal government or local officials?
No, all I can say is we're glad where they wound up. You're right. The letters we got from the National Park Service several years ago are kind of contradictory to the letter we got this week. But we wound up where we wanted to be, so we're not going to shake the bureaucracy anymore.
We're not going to shake it.
We're not going to shake it. We're just going to leave it as it is. Yeah. All right. Well, good for
them. And it's a cool story. Like, if you're ever out in that part of the state, it's small, right? It's just a one-room schoolhouse. But they have a lot of facts and mementos and stories. So it's a cool little visit if you're ever over in that part of the state.
Which isn't far, and it's not that far from here. All right. So it was a lighter week for Upfronts, but we have plenty of other topics to talk about, because I'm going to have you for the whole hour to talk all things Wisconsin news and politics. So when we come back, Hannah Dugan's sentencing is this week. Yeah. So we're going to talk about what the prosecution would like to see versus the defense. So stay with us. He is Matt Smith. I am Kristen Bry, and this is Point Taken. Welcome back to Point Taken. I am Kristen Bry. Steve is off today. He'll be back tomorrow, sitting for the whole hour with Matt Smith, political director over at Channel 12. So I have to imagine you guys will be all over this story this week. But Hannah Dugan, scheduled to be sentenced on Wednesday.
Yeah.
Is the expectation still that we're going to hear from her on Wednesday?
Possibly, yeah.
Okay.
And in terms of hear from her, I guess it would be before the federal judge. Who knows what will happen after the sentencing. But this has been a long time coming, right?
We're at month 15?
Yeah, so it was a year ago, April.
April 2025,
And after numerous attempts by her legal team requesting that U.S. District Judge Lynn Edelman either reverse the guilty conviction or request a new trial, we are now at the official sentencing stage, which is scheduled to take place on Wednesday.
And so the prosecutors want jail time or prison time.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't come out and explicitly say send her to prison. But what they did in their filings last week is said, first of all, the defense is asking for time served, essentially. She hasn't served any time, but they've argued, listen, she went through the trial. She lost her job. She resigned shortly after the conviction. And the defense will argue that is punishment enough. The prosecutors say, listen, no, there needs to be more of a severe punishment. And they didn't outline a specific number, but they pointed to the federal guidelines, which... I don't have the document in front of me, like 12 to 24 months or something like that, in terms of what the federal guidelines are for a sentence of this type. So they pointed to that and asked for a sentence that meets the crime, so to speak. So the judge now will take all of this into consideration, all of everything that's transpired. through the trial, through the sentencing, through the post, through the post trial, all of those documents in terms of what he will do.
This is from a, not with the reality of the story, but that thinking through how big of a story this was back in April 2025, and it's been 15-ish months. Do you feel like the momentum and the interest from watchers or audience like is still there for this, or do you feel like on the whole people have moved on from this story?
It received a lot of national attention, obviously, when it first happened, when the arrest happened, when the FBI director posted the picture on social media of the arrest. And this is a very unusual case, right? The federal government arresting a circuit court judge for charges like this. The incident is unusual. What she is convicted of is not. So I mean, this is a very unique situation. There was a ton of national attention. It waned a little bit even during the trial.
That's what I mean. I feel like trial came and I think there was some national news here, but it didn't feel as intense. And even with this, with the sentencing coming, obviously it will be news, but is this just another victim of like a fast news cycle where people are on to the next thing?
And I think like it's gone through the process and it's been a slow process, right? Mm-hmm. And there's part of federal trials that are just hard to cover and capture because you don't have images, you don't have video, you don't have testimony, right? Because there's no cameras allowed in federal courtrooms. So like the coverage of federal trials is just inherently different. I don't want to say boring, but in terms of using a word to describe what there is access to, right? Like we're a visual medium. We're on our phones all the time. So there's no images coming from the courtroom. There's no audio. There's no testimony, right? So the coverage of it is a little different just because it's a federal trial. I think if the judge were to sentence her to any prison time, I think that would receive a ton of attention. There are a lot of experts who don't believe that that's what's going to happen. And I think it will be a mention then, and I think people will move on.
And is the fact that there's experts who think it's not going to happen, is that more of a reflection of Len Edelman or what is leading them to think that?
I think both. I think the judge himself, Lynn Edelman, and I think also just the nature of the crime that she's committed of and the fact that she has resigned. Like there's a number of factors, right? Like in terms of reoffending in this fashion, she would not be able to do that because she's no longer a judge, right? So there are stipulations and things in place that could lead to a sentence that's on the lighter side as opposed to what could come.
Got it. Well, and also there's some images. There's the drawings.
There's the sketches. Yeah, absolutely. Which are
great.
Which when you work for television are vital to telling a story because you literally have nothing. They're hard to cover.
Yeah, for
sure. You have to pay attention.
All right. When we come back, J.D. Vance is coming this week as of released this morning that he will be here on Wednesday. So we will talk about that with Matt Smith. I am Kristen Bry, and this is Point Taken. Well, welcome back to Point Taken. I am Kristen Bry. Matt Smith is here, all our political director over at Channel 12. So now it's going to be a big Wednesday. So we were just talking about Hannah Dugan's sentencing that's happening Wednesday. And also now Vice President J.D. Vance is coming to Milwaukee and they're holding an event at the 128th Air Refueling Wing.
Yep.
So what is this? What do we know so far?
No details yet on the specific event. I've had several people tell me confirming for me the fact that the vice president will be in town Wednesday. He goes across the country and does a lot of events like this, smaller type groups. And he'll usually does an address, talk about a topic. So we'll see what he's coming for. And I think it was WisPolitics who first reported that he'll also be in town for a fundraiser as well for Republican Governors Association. That's completely separate from the official stop that will be at the 128th. But it just goes to show, I mean, these stops, whether it be for fundraisers or official visits, right? I mean, they don't just pull a place out of a hat, right? Like, we're going to see a lot in Wisconsin, I think, between now and November, not only for the congressional races, the governor's race, but the White House wants to make sure these battleground states stay or vote Republican, depending on, right, what big races are in those states.
Because where was he last? Lacrosse?
Last in Wisconsin, I believe, was Lacrosse.
He was Lacrosse, and then President Trump was
in Chippewa Falls area. Okay. Yes, yep, and a number of cabinet members have been out here as well. RFK Jr., the ag secretary, and a number of them continuing to kind of go throughout. And I think we're going to see a lot of focus on the 3rd Congressional. This is a little different, this Milwaukee stop on Wednesday, obviously. But I think a lot of the attention, like we've seen and will see, will be on the 3rd Congressional as well.
Is there any polling as far as the primary that's happening in the 3rd Congressional
district? Not that I've seen on the Democrats. No, nothing substantial on that. I think there's clearly a lot of talk about Rebecca Cook, right? In just in terms of the fundraising and what she's done and the fact that she's run prior. But no, I haven't seen any really solid. I'm sure they have internals that they're circulating throughout the district.
What do you know off the top of your head? If you don't, no problem. from the last, because we're going to have in basically 10 days, less than 9 days, the new filing reports.
Yeah.
For in the last filing reports, where was Rebecca Cook in comparison to Derek Van Orden?
That I don't know off the top of my head.
Okay.
We'll be interesting to look at these new numbers, right? Because this will kind of encapsulate a whole new fundraising period when stuff really started to ramp up. So her numbers to Derek Van Orden, to other Democrats, will be a fascinating look just in terms of where everything sits as we now head into August and then November.
So then which one are you going to cover on Wednesday?
We'll have to see.
Is that a daytime, like a morning decision?
No.
Which one would you rather do?
There's a lot of there's a lot of planning that goes into it. I'll cover whatever comes my way. they're all good. They're all big events.
I was going to say, is there something else then on top of that that we know is happening this week? That you're also looking at the calendar saying who's going where?
Not off the top of my head.
Okay.
In terms of planned events. It's a Monday after a holiday. We got to ease into this
week.
Just a little bit.
You're really stretching me. Can you just make the questions a little bit easier? I'm here for an hour. Give me a break.
Yeah. What's going on?
All right. When we come back, we will talk about the governor's race.
Yeah.
And a couple more elbows being thrown. Two candidates who did not go to a forum last week after they received what the questions were going to be. Plenty to talk about with Matt Smith. I am Kristen Bry, and news is next. Welcome back to Point Taken. I am Kristen Bry, here with Matt Smith for another half hour. Talking now, Wisconsin Democratic primary for governor. There's like a lot of little stories, it feels like, here and there. Like last week, there was some, I don't know, I think the headline from WPR was, it turns negative. I don't even know if you could really say, it doesn't feel ugly yet. And I don't know if it will get ugly, but it feels like there's like some pointing out of other people's past. Like, so Mandela basically had a little bit of a swipe that the fact that Sarah Rodriguez had taken money from We Energies. And wasn't there something, did something go back towards him?
Yeah, there's been a growing number of little swipes.
Yeah,
I like that.
Let's outline the little swipes versus the all out brawl.
We're almost a month out.
I know. People are voted. I mean, some people have already mailed in their ballots.
There are six candidates still in the race. And if you're, I think it's fair to say, right, conventional wisdom will tell us Mandela Barnes, Francesca Hong, Sarah Rodriguez, top three. Polling will tell us that.
Every polling, yeah.
Internals right now, everything's telling us that. So, like, even among those three, and then the three below them, if you don't start doing something significant to distinguish yourself, and these fundraising numbers that we just talked about are going to be so critical to see where everyone sits, like, time is really quickly running out in terms of trying to make an impression on primary voters. It's the middle of summer. People are incredibly busy, right? So, like, you've got to go now if you want to make a run at this.
And so with the, because I think that I saw this morning that Sarah had taken some corporate PAC money, mm-hmm. so I don't know if that will start to be a thing. And I don't know which of these, any of these that move the needle for anyone who's not just paying attention as closely as people like us are, or people not necessarily in the media, but there's a lot of people who are paying attention like this, and there's a lot of people that aren't.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because as of yesterday, Mallory McMorrow, which is obviously the Senate race that's happening in Michigan, where there was a very contested primary. She, I think when she announced, a lot of people thought that she was the person. She suspended her campaign yesterday, and their primary is a week before ours. Theirs is August 4th. And so at this point, if anyone else were to, it's not even, you're not even dropping out now. You're suspending your campaign because they're on the ballot. Missy's name's on the ballot.
There will be seven candidates on the ballot, right? Who is still running come August 11th, I guess, to be determined. But the question, what you're going at is this wave of Democratic socialists winning primaries. Is that going to happen with Francesca Hong here in Wisconsin?
And so as you've been paying attention, because much to Steve's dismay, we've had a lot of conversations around DSA and socialists and Hassan Piker.
Yeah.
And right. And he's like, you know, he feels like we're giving it too much airtime, and which is fine. But it's also like, to me, it is a national story, and it is something that is taking foot here of like, this is the probably the most high profile could be statewide campaign with a DSA candidate. So as you're reading things that happened in Colorado or New York, like, where do you draw parallels or insight for your coverage?
I mean, you look at these campaigns, right, and how they're structured and what they're talking about and what they're doing. They're going to unconventional, different places. They're campaigning a little differently than your traditional Democratic campaign. And I think the real question when we look at Francesca Hong is it's undeniable, the support, right, like online, and there's this movement. I think the question that a lot of Democrats still can't totally wrap their head around is, how big is it? And who is going to vote on August 11th? So there's a number of things that I think we're going to be looking at. The fundraising report's going to be huge. There's going to be a Marquette poll out. We're going to have our debate on July 28th. All of this leading up to August 11th. And if there are still six people in the race, there's going to be seven people on the ballot. But you would think you would just vote for the people who are still running. You know, we'll see. If there are still six people in the race, you're not going to need a big percentage to win.
Exactly. And so I'm pretty sure you can fix your ballot, though, right? Is if you do in the time of, because that's what happened with Godlewski and Lazary after they dropped out in 2022 and they were on the ballot and it was so close to the election, that if we do see more people suspend their campaign and you've already mailed in your ballot,
you
can contact your clerk and get it. And get issued.
Yeah, if you early vote, week another candidate drops out, and but it's really going to be over this next month, to kind of circle back to what we started on. Is anyone going to really go after another candidate, someone they may potentially see as the front runner, or are we all just going to play nice for the next month and say, all right, voters, you decide?
Well, because there was a New York Times article this weekend featuring Francesca Hong.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking about just the fact that between that and then after the, however you want to describe it, the discourse of her going on the Hassan Piker and Mike from PA podcast last week, or streamers, Twitch, whatever.
And the reaction from the other candidates.
That's what
to
I mean.
That.
And so there's a fair amount, and I don't know who, I'm sure the campaigns track this, but the amount of earned media, right, that comes with having an unconventional campaign. And in, like, is that the theory or the strategy behind taking a big swing or going more negative, is that it becomes, with that comes more earned media and thus more attention? Because at this point, what can anyone do? Because it's one thing to get on commercials up, but it's the attention. It's having people talk about you, and you can't deny that this is the person who the most amount of people are talking about, even if you're not planning on voting for her.
Yeah. And the question is, how does that relate to Wisconsin voters? Because a lot of that attention has been national, right? In terms of the fundraising and going on those appearances and the national articles. So that's bringing a lot of national attention and potentially more money, right? Which any campaign will welcome and need in terms of fundraising. So what does that do now on the ground to Wisconsin voters outside of Milwaukee and Madison? I'll be curious to see what her support looks like outstate, especially potentially in the polling when we can kind of break that down going into the primary. and where these candidates are pulling their support from, and what that's going to look like headed into November for Democrats broadly.
When does that next poll come out?
End of July-ish.
End of July. All right, so we'll get...
Mid-July, mid-end.
Next week we'll get funding.
Yep.
And then the week after that we get it polling. And even more people will be voting. All right, stay with us. This is Point Taken. Welcome back to Point Taken. I'm Kristen Bry. We're talking to Matt Smith, political director over at Channel 12. Now, we, as in this show, briefly touched on this with Jeremy Janine last week, but we have seen a surge of ICE presence and ICE arrests starting last week, or was it even before that?
And it seems like it was a small, but there was a window in terms of at least from what we've seen and heard. There were 39 arrests, I believe, over a couple day period, over a week. And it seems like that kind of was the focus of everyone's attention. There have now been questions after this, in terms of whether ICE will comply with the city's new ordinances in terms of masks and face coverings, which there were video and pictures of ICE agents with their faces covered. So we haven't heard from the city attorney, like an opinion on this yet. And I know some council members are urging that that happen if we see more activity on whether ICE will comply with these new ordinances, whether the city has any way to enforce that, or if the city would attempt to take any action against the federal government on that. So I think those are some of, at least from a city versus federal government perspective, those are some of the lingering questions I think still out there that some council members would like some more solid answers to.
And so with, as it's being described, like a surge.
Yeah.
Was it disruptive? Like, as far as the experience, was it just roving agents and I'm thinking about this in comparison of how dominant last year and the first couple months of this year ICE tactics were, as far as obviously Minnesota, but even before that, of just surges and stopping people randomly. And while 39 people is a lot of people, is this a still a pretty big difference under Homan and Mark Wayne Bovino? No, well, it was Bovino. But now with Mark Wayne Mullins and like some of the changes that have happened, that it is more targeted. It is not as random, and it is not as disruptive to the entire community who happens to be witnessing the appearance. Is that what reporting showed?
It appears so. Obviously disruptive for those people involved, but it appears, in terms of grand scale, in large mass operations where you would have hundreds of ICE agents come into a community, we have not seen that, right, since in full flux Minnesota. There's also kind of a sidebar to this, a development that happened last week with this lawsuit involving sheriffs and ICE. There's that lawsuit out there, remember, on whether whether Wisconsin sheriffs can cooperate with ICE detainers. We've seen a lot of the Democratic candidates for governor saying, I would look to ban these as governor. Well, the federal government last week came in and said, we want to be an official party in this lawsuit, which is a rare move. If the state Supreme Court allows that, that essentially could move the case back to federal court. So there's still kind of this ping pong on whether the state Supreme Court will hear this, or the federal government will hear this, or whether this will move to federal court. The sheriffs involved in this would like this to move to federal court. So we'll kind of have to see how that plays out, because now not only is this a court issue, but it's becoming an increasingly larger campaign issue as well, in terms of whether sheriffs can or should cooperate with ICE.
Got it. All right. We will be back for one more segment with Matt Smith after this. Question from a texter from where is 760? I have to look that up as far as that area code. Question, is there going to be any televised debate between the candidates for governor on Wisconsin?
There is.
There is.
Southeastern California. Southern or Southeastern California.
Either a long distance listener or someone who moved here. Because I have a 310 number.
Do you?
I do, from my LA days.
Still have it. Yeah. it's good to keep. There is, in fact, going to be a debate that we are going to host WISN July 28th, Tuesday, 7 p.m. So WISN TV on ABC stations across the state. And then, of course, we'll have it streaming on our YouTube, our website, Facebook. So you'll be able to watch it literally wherever you are. We have some work to do ahead of that.
What are the, with six people, so what are the rules going to be as far as how much time people get? Rebuttals? Is that finalized yet?
We're going to do it like we do our other debates, which will be a little more chaotic with potentially six people on the stage. But no buzzers, no exact time limits. Jaron, Jordan, and myself, as we have before, will moderate the time. We have people tracking time. The candidates can interact and respond to each other. We want them to have a conversation within the bounds and limits, and we will move the topics along and move the discussion along as is necessary, but it will go by quick. So there are some like basic ground rules, but we try to shy away from the your mic is cut off or your buzzer is cut off, because we feel that only leads to pre-rehearsed answers, right? So we want voters to be able to learn something from these candidates before they go to the polls and make their decisions.
And what's your guys, as an individual or as a station, or the rules that you choose to engage with for the debate on the moderator's ability to fact check in real time? Like, do you just let the answers, like, is it up to other candidates to fact check that? Or how much do you, as obviously still journalists, do you ever have a follow up statement or correction?
Yeah, I mean, we don't rule that out.
Okay.
We do want the candidates to be able to speak as much as we don't want it to become a war between us and them.
For sure.
Right. Like, and that's not saying we're not answering hard questions or fact checking or right. Like that,
I asked because those were some of the rules that were discussed in 2024 in presidential debates of like, is there follow up? Yeah. Is there not?
Yes. Yeah. So it is open for follow up. It is open, for candidates to respond. If someone calls someone out, we'll let them respond. And so we want it to be a little more free flowing than a really strict debate format.
And how long will it be?
It's scheduled for an hour, which will go by incredibly fast. No commercials, though.
How many questions can you even ask in an hour when there's six?
We'll move it along. We'll move it along.
Give the date again and where everyone can watch it.
July 28th. So Tuesday, July 28th. That is the same day as in-person early voting starts across the state. 7 p.m. WISN TV, and then streaming everywhere.
And then you can always see Matt every Sunday on Upfront. Uh-huh. As always, Matt Smith.
It's been a fast hour. Fast hours.
We'll see you on Monday.
Yeah. Have a good rest of your week.
You too. Go get acclimated for the week.
I know. The work week is here. Vacation is over.
Get that brain working. All right, we'll be back with Dave Spano after this.
The work week is here. Let's begin with your Monday market preview with Annex Wealth Management CEO Dave Spano on Point Taken.
All right, Dave, how was your weekend?
You got your summer wear on. Look at you.
Purple tank on. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, the weekend was great. I hope everybody enjoyed wonderful weather in northern Wisconsin where I was, and a lot of smiling faces and enjoying the outdoors.
Awesome. We love that. All right. Well, I saw a headline this morning that the Dow Jones is on the precipice of hitting 53,000. Are we still on track for that?
We're on track. Yeah.
So what is going on?
There's so many good things. You know, we're surrounded all the time by such negative news, and our job in the financial planning and wealth management world is to try to parse through that and find out what is real and what is making the markets really move. And so, you know, what's coming up now, you know, we have earnings season every quarter, right? And so last earnings season was one of the best on record, up 29% earnings growth, and it's expected to be somewhere in that neighborhood again in this coming quarter. So you'll remember where we were 3 months ago. There's so much negative news, but you know the Senate has confirmed now Kevin Warsh, so you know who the Federal Reserve chair is. That is a big thing. You've got perhaps a winding down of the war in Iran with an MOU and the opening of the straits. And so much good news, Kristen, that is happening and being priced into the market. Earnings season is going to come, and I think you're going to hear a lot of good stories again about companies doing better than expectations.
So then tomorrow, SpaceX joins the Dow, right?
joins the NASDAQ.
And so what are you preparing for, expecting? What should we see as of, like, is it going to go up even more tomorrow?
Well, anytime that you join an index or an indice, a lot of money comes into that particular stock. So there's probably going to be a little bit of volume. But what it's going to do for the NASDAQ, the triple Q is the indice, is it's not going to move that much because it's a small float. And what does that mean? It's the, you know, so company, just say a company has $1 million of a million shares out there. They only have 5% float. And that's because they just haven't issued as many shares. And those shares that were issued are held by insiders. So you're not going to see a big move because it's a small float. So it's going to be in the triple Q, but it's not going to have as a dramatic effect as some of the bigger memory names, for example. And you think about all the stocks that are on the NASDAQ from chip makers and the like. They are still going to have an outsized effect on the triple Q.
Got it. All right. Although I did see this as well. I didn't realize that iPhone was coming out with a foldable phone, iPhone.
Yeah.
And then that it's like Apple jumped like 5% last week because of that.
Well, you know, it's funny. I haven't updated my iPhone in a bit, but you know, will it have an effect? I'm sure, but it's going to be expensive. There are some people saying that it could cost more than $2,000 for this phone, and I don't know, it's like buying a laptop, right?
Yeah, so, I mean that basically is what my last laptop cost.
Right. So we'll see. But you did see that Apple did take a bit of a hit because. And let's go back to what we were talking about, memory. And because memory there's been a shortage of memory, and that's been a reason why you've seen a lot of these stocks go up, is because there are backlogs that could go, Kristen, some are saying into 2028 and 2029 before the backlogs are caught up in the memory stocks. And so inside of your phone is memory, and so it has to pay more for the memory to go in your phone. Therefore, the price of the phone is going up. And so they're all related. So we'll have to see if you and I are so fashionable that we'll have these flip phones back to the bag phones. That's where I'm going to go back to.
No, exactly. I think the Midday News did a feature on a new dumber phone. It's like not quite a dumb phone,
right?
But it has no social media. It has like all the things you actually need from your smartphone now, and no access to the rest of it. It's like, that's probably what I need.
I'm gonna go back to the corner phone, the payphone, put 10 cents in and see if I can get anything.
Actually, this is a fun story. My husband just signed us up to get a landline.
No, there you go. So he's full circle.
Full circle. He wants us no phones in the bedroom, but he wants an emergency. So like a very small amount of people will have the number, but so that we can get people can get a hold of us if they need to.
Yes,
but yeah,
sure.
As soon as you get all the spam
cold calls back to your house, and we'll see where that goes.
That's what I want to know. Is these unsolicited calls at dinner time still a thing? All right, let's take a break quickly. We're talking to Dave Spano, CEO at Annex Wealth Management. And this morning, Trump rang the bell to open the market at the White House, which is the first time that ever happened. So we'll talk a little bit about that. Trump accounts, more with Dave. I'm Kristen. This is Point Taken. Welcome back to Point Taken. I am Kristen Bry. Steve is out today. He'll be back tomorrow. We are talking to Dave Spano, CEO of Annex Wealth Management. And before I forget, we want to talk about the webinars that are coming up. So there's Navigating the Markets this Thursday at noon, so July 9th. What can people expect from that, Dave?
Yeah, that's a webinar, and we'll just kind of, it's an interactive presentation. We'll go through the markets and the economy and so much going on. And of course, we're going to get some more news from FOMC news. And of course, you know, one of the things that, you know, we've kind of glossed over is the fact that some are now projecting that crude could trade at $60 a barrel or lower, and why that's important. Of course, gas prices go down, and it was a big part of the inflation spike. This would suggest that we would actually have inflation that would be a negative 0.1 for the month. And so that means inflation expectations are coming down. That means interest rates could come down. So a lot of positive things that could happen. And we'll explain what that means to a potential portfolio.
Got it. And then on July 14th, Instant Insights, Inflation Trends. That's kind of what you were just talking about as far as inflation and interest.
Yeah, exactly right. And so this is a big deal. You know, you'll remember that so many years ago we were talking about, you know, 9 and 10% inflation and the way it was affecting people. And of course, we always talk about the everyday inflation, the every person inflation versus that headline inflation number. And that is really what people pay out of their pocket, what they really pay for. And so as oil prices come back down and travel costs come back down, that is going to be a really positive thing. And, of course, that does have an effect on people's portfolios because interest rates are such a determinant factor.
All right. Well, as always, just click events at annexwealth.com. Set your reminder for both webinars coming up this week. All right. So this, I mean, I don't know if this is a big deal. It seems like a big deal. It's the first time it ever happened. But from the White House, President Trump rang the opening bell for the stock market in honor of the Trump accounts basically launching today. And so Is this performative? Is it a big deal? Like,
of course
I just saw
it's performative.
It seems like
we're talking about Donald J. Trump. Of course it's performative. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, every day the bell gets rung, right? And so it's just a cool story. I mean, there's people that you might even know who've rung the bell before to open, opens at 8:30, closes at 3 o'clock. And so it's the three rings. And so he did that today. But of course, the reason why he did that was because of the Trump accounts are open, and that means that you can put $1,000 into to a kid's account. And I think if you're born between this year and 2028, $1,000 goes in by taxpayer dollars, so every kid is going to have $1,000, and then of course you can add to it up to $5,000. So you put that in on top of the other planning ideas, the other gifting ideas. At least it's going to give some of these kids a leg up that they wouldn't have $1,000. So it's pretty good.
So as part of the services that Annex does, I'm assuming you guys help parents when they have younger children of where to open a 529 Edvest account or all these different things. And so, am I right there? I'll stop and ask that first.
Yeah, the answer is right. Yeah.
And so, is this an addition to other accounts that you guys are already suggesting that people open? Is it a replacement of? Like, where does this fit in the, as someone who is the mother of a small child, I mean, she's not eligible for that $1,000 because she was born in 2023. But as far as for advice for parents right now, what is the landscape of accounts you suggest they have for their kids?
Yeah, that's for sure. I mean, you would take advantage of this if you can. That's number one. But there's all other things that you would do, not only for setting up a 529 plan. That sounds pretty basic, but it's something you should do. I know I did it for my kids when they were very, very young, and by the time they got to college, there was a significant amount of money in there because we were very diligent about contributing. And once when you do that over 18 years, and it does add up. And trust me, with what we paid for our kids to go to college on an annual basis, it you need to do that. So you need to start early on 529 plans. That would be part of that. And the Trump account would be one other idea. But there's other gifting ideas. It depends on the people and their economic background.
Does the Trump account, because that's not just for education, right? Or
no,
is it?
They can use it for anything. No,
they can use it for anything.
Yeah, right. So and the reason why it was a popular idea is just because there was only a certain amount of percentage of kids who were going to college. And this is for everybody. It's not, you don't have to actually go to college to have this tax accumulation of philosophy work. So we like it. We think it's a good start.
All right, great. And then finally, I just read this as far as I was unaware of the Sun Valley Conference.
Yeah.
What is the Sun Valley Conference? And have you ever gone?
No, I've never gone. So you know what it is? It is a summer camp for billionaires. You know, when there was summer camp, kids used to have to chop the wood and carry the canoe over the highway, right? And so this is something very different. It's a gathering of leaders in Sun Valley, Idaho, and which is a pretty cool place. But, a lot of rich people get together. And they talk about potential ideas. The reason why it turns out to be a good idea, and gets a lot of coverage, is people like Tim Cook and Bezos and Zuckerberg and Sam Altman, all these people are there. And a lot of times, over a backyard barbecue backyard and maybe a beer or two, the people talk about maybe we should do something together with our companies. Or did you ever think about that? So there is generally some good news, but it's a backyard barbecue for billionaires, right? Try saying that a couple times, right? So it's a cool idea, but they don't have to bring a dish to pass. That's different than you and I when we go to a backyard.
Our barbecue is a little bit different. That's the only difference, though. That's the only difference.
That would be it. That and a couple billion short. That would be really it. Yeah.
All right, Dave. As always, thank you so much for spending time with us on Mondays. We love it when you're here. And have a great start to the week.
Yeah, and just one more thing. You know, we've been doing this Women in Wealth, and so we've we've show that's bought it now, but we have an evening coming up hosted at the Botanical Gardens. That's July 16th. So if Women in Wealth and they're interested, they can go to our website, annexwealth.com, and sign up for that as well. But always, Kristen, always nice to see you. Nice talking to you as
Absolutely.
Well.
All right. See you later, Dave.
See ya. Bye.
We'll be back with more after this. All right, so I asked this question earlier when Matt Smith was here, and it's kind of a surface-level question, but I'm interested in what people think. So, as I said earlier, I was at on Saturday with friends, and our friend, they have two kids, one who's 5 and one who's a little bit younger than Frankie, so he's a little over 2, 2 and a half, and we were getting ready. We were going to go see the fireworks, and just despite Frankie not taking a nap on Saturday, we're like, well, you know, we'll deal with the consequences of this tomorrow. And my friend asked me, she's like, am I a bad mom for the fact that my 5-year-old has never seen fireworks? Because she is a stickler for bedtime. And in the summer for fireworks, because the days are so long, definitely past bedtime. And I don't think a bad mom is definitely not the right term. But I'm interested for you, whether you your kids are already grown, whether you have young kids. Like, what is the rule for you as far as being adhering to bedtime and being a stickler for it despite certain holidays? And how old were your kids the first time you let them stay up for fireworks? And I don't think baby counts, because Matt had said, he's like, you know, my kids were like, we had like that, they were infants. Because I feel like with the infants, like, they can just sleep on your chest. It's like, once they're old enough that they're not going to sleep through the fireworks. And it's like, do you make the move to actually stay out? And like, we definitely dealt with our consequences yesterday as far as her mood and attitude. But it was also very fun to see her experience them. But beyond that, I also want to take a moment, because we have not talked to you since Thursday. And right after the show on Thursday, Joe Zepecki, Bill McCoshin, they came to the studio, even though we did not have a live show to do. And Steve, Bill, Joe, and I recorded a Reflecting on 250 podcast. And so we aired it on Saturday and Sunday as a live show. Well, we aired it live, but it is still available for a podcast. And I wanted to play a little bit of a clip of it for you so you can get the tone of what the conversation was like. So, Jazz, can we play that clip?
And that notion that debate and disagreement and competing schools of thought around the founding of this country is who we are as Americans, I think about a lot in the context of the show that we get to do every Friday. And the fact that Bill and I can disagree agreeably and have different worldviews, but we both consider ourselves patriots who love this country. And there is something special about that. And as so much of the partisan shouting seems like so uncouth, some of it might be, right? But also some of it is like a really essential part of being an American.
So that gives, that's good. That's where we started off the conversation, as far as the idea that America is built on disagreeing and debating and getting to consensus. And that's what this has always been about. And so it was a really fascinating conversation. If you have not heard it yet and you would like to hear it, I will send you the WTMJ.com link that has both the YouTube video and the audio, if you don't have time to watch it. But just text 250 to 855-616-1620. That's 250 to 855-616-1620 to listen to the, I think it's about 40 minutes, and it's Bill, Joe, Steve, and I reflecting on America's 250. But as Matt said, we still have this is the whole year. There's still more opportunities. Just because July 4th is over, doesn't mean that we can't keep celebrating and reflecting on what it means to be American and what we appreciate about living in this country, and also where we go from here. But again, 250 to 855-616-1620 if you would like to get the link to that conversation. When we come back, yes, we are going to talk about it. We're going to talk about the red card that has now been suspended and how much influence our president had over that. Welcome back to Point Taken. I am Kristen Bry. Steve will be back tomorrow. And I am wondering what his thoughts are on this, because I feel like I've seen the evolution of Steve in regards to the World Cup. Like, I think when it first started, he was just lukewarm. And I feel like as the men's team has done better, as he's seen the celebrations, like, I feel like his vibe right now is he's much more into the World Cup than he was the first 2 weeks of June. I'm also very into it, and I will be the first one to admit that I am not like a all year round soccer fan where I'm getting up to go to like Red Lion or Three Lions or Nomad at early in the morning to go watch my favorite team at any point of the year. That is not me. I'm not going to pretend. I still don't totally understand offsides, like the fact that which game was that when was it Paraguay? One of them where it's like the VR and everything that has to happen with offsides. So I'm not a soccer aficionado, but I am very into this World Cup, especially culturally and what it means. So first of all, with that caveat, people who are much bigger soccer fans, feel free to weigh in on the text line as we talk about this story. 855-616-1620. So Mike and I are at brunch yesterday after obviously having a very fun Saturday celebrating the 4th, and my notifications light up and it says that Balogun's red card has been suspended. And for people who have not been following along with this, Balogun is on last week when we were playing, Bosnia. He got a red card and like everyone was fighting over whether or not it was a red card. I saw a lot of sports analysts say that it should not have been a red card, that it was a mistake, there wasn't malice. But because in soccer, if you get a red card, you're suspended for the next game, we all were expecting that our highest scorer, who's been having an excellent tournament, was not going to be playing against Belgium, which is the game is tonight. And so all of a sudden, having that notification pop up and say, he's playing, my husband and I were very excited. This was really good news. It seemed unheard of because everything I was listening to and reading the day after last week's game was that this doesn't really happen, that the U.S. could appeal, but it like usually never even happens. And even if you do the appeal, they can make the suspension for even more games. So there's a risk in the appeal process and all these different things. So I think I would imagine that the team was just preparing for this game under the assumption that he was not going to be able to play. Obviously, we're very excited as just fans, and also for the player, I am excited that he can play. Because this is a story that I think has multiple truths to it. And first and foremost, I think it is true that we are excited that he is playing. And then the follow-up story within, I don't know, maybe an hour of that first news breaking was that President Trump had called FIFA's president, Infantino, over the suspension. And I think as of this morning, even as we've been on air, Trump has been asked in press conferences about, you know, what the conversation was like. I have not gotten to see or hear the whole clip first because I've been on air. But now, as you might imagine, everything becomes very gray because, like I said, multiple things can be true. The truth can be that the red card from last week was a bad call and that Balogun deserves to play and that you can be excited to watch him play tonight. It can also be true that the White House calling FIFA and apparently collecting lawyers to... I want to be careful with my words because I also don't, it feels like such a weird thing because obviously this is the world and different countries playing against each other. But like, can you imagine if Trump had called like on behalf of the Bears during playoffs? Like if you think about this as a league instead of countries competing for each other, the fact that political bodies are calling up private organizations running the tournament And apparently, I think the, like the little clip or the, on the Chyron, you know, Trump was like, I was just asking questions. But then I'm also seeing different reporting as far as like a legal team being brought together to look at what the like the potential would be to appeal or challenge. And the thing that is the most ironic about all of this is the fact that, as we talked about last week, Balogun is only in the U.S. and can only play for the U.S. because of birthright citizenship, which is the exact same policy that this White House has spent 18 months trying to end. Literally within the week of birthright citizenship being held up at the Supreme Court. And so it is a lot of different things at the same time. So I guess my question to you, if you've been following this story, if you are interested in the U.S. men's team advancing, like, is the political, the head of a country calling FIFA, is that corruption? And this is the definition of corruption. Corruption is the abuse of entrusted power for personal gain. It involves dishonest, fraudulent, or illegal behavior such as bribery, embezzlement, or nepotism by individuals in authority. Broadly, it can also refer to physical decay, moral deterioration, and the distortion of an original state. And so that's what people are saying. This is corrupt. FIFA's corrupt. And so now, you know, you have Trump, who his own corruption and all of that. And like, it's going to be a big asterisk next to the U.S. if they actually win tonight. And is that true? Is this corruption as far as political bodies getting inserting themselves into the process? And two, is this now become a lose-lose that even if we win the game tonight, there's such a big asterisk next to it as far as what is fair and what is not? So I would love, especially people who are big soccer fans, but even if you're not, even if you're kind of new to it like I am and just excited and it's been fun to watch, this is a story with so many layers, and I am interested in hearing people's takes on what happens. So 855-616-1620. I mean, I still want us to win tonight, though. I will say that. All right, we'll be back in a minute. Well, that lit up the text line. We got a lot of texts on, is it corruption? Is what Trump just did, or the Trump administration, as far as calling the president of FIFA, and it's not that the red card was turned over. Another former player was talking about, like, the fact that FIFA has now, it's basically, Balogun's now on this suspension, like this probation period. So the red card doesn't go away. So it's not that the call itself was overturned. It's just that he gets to play tonight. And so some of the analysis I saw, like, it would have been, if they would just said it was a bad call, it wasn't a red card, and the red card goes away. But technically, as far as I understand, the red card violation still stands. It's just he can still play. And so it has been fascinating to watch. I mean, and, you know, obviously there's also a lot of feelings that go into this. As far as I know, basically, I know Belgium has already appealed, but also the Union of European Football Associations has came out with a statement saying FIFA crossed a red line by lifting the U.S. strikers, Balogun's one-match suspension. So I think that part, what I'm understanding, again, newbie, FIFA seems wildly inconsistent. Like, the reffing seems inconsistent. The decisions seem inconsistent because there was Cristiano Ronaldo before the World Cup started. He had a red card that was suspended, but also as far as a red card being overturned in the World Cup, that hasn't happened since 1962. So it's like all of these different inconsistencies that I think, obviously, on top of the actual corruption that we know as far as bribery and things that happen inside of FIFA. All right, we have a caller right now, Kathy from Whitefish Bay. How are you feeling about the situation?
Sports are very complicated, and the more you complicate it with politics, you blur the purity of them.
Yep.
Trump never should have done that. He made it more impure, and having the FIFA president be at the White House and present him with a peace trophy makes it even worse.
Yeah.
So, no, he shouldn't have done it. It's an analogy of, like, parents interfering in their little kid's Little League game. Knock it off. He doesn't belong. Keep his nose out of it.
So how are you going to feel if
the coaches figure
it? Kathy, how are you going to feel if the U.S. wins tonight?
There's an asterisk.
Yeah.
It's like when the batters were using steroids and they get all those home runs. There's an asterisk.
Yeah. All right. Thanks so much for the call,
and
Kathy.
If they're a good team, we should win.
And that's the thing. It's like, I'm not rooting for the U.S. not to win tonight, right? Like, I am rooting for Balogun to play well. I am rooting for us to win. I still don't know if we have what it takes to make it to, like, the championship game or not. But it... it just feels... I don't know. I think it just feels like this is a sport. Because even with the Olympics, like, I can't imagine, like, heads of state are calling in favors when the Olympics make certain decisions. But yes, so we have a lot of people texting in. Let's take one more break. I'll read some of these texts as far as people's feelings about Balogun, the red card, FIFA, Trump, all of it. So stay here. The number is 855-616-1620, and this is Point Taken. Lots and lots of feelings about what has transpired in the last 24 hours when it comes to the Trump administration getting involved with FIFA's decision to... But it's not even overturning... It's overturning the one-game suspension, but it's not overturning the red card that Balogun got last week so that he can play tonight. And it seems like the overarching response from texters calling in is that multiple things can be true. And as one person said, I am happy and disgusted at the same time. I asked if it was corruption. One texter said, maybe not corruption, but not correct. Coach should sit the guy out. Let's win fair and square. What my favorite, funniest line so far from the 414 is, I'm confused. I thought Trump was only interested in revoking green cards. And then someone else accused me that if Biden or Kamala Harris would have made the call about the soccer game, I wouldn't be talking about this. And I feel like you do not listen to this show if you don't know how much I care about the integrity of sports. I would absolutely be talking about this no matter. It feels like it's supposed to be separate. Like, I have yet to see a rundown of, and I'm sure someone's collecting it as we speak, but a rundown, if any, of when heads of state have made a move like this in any sport, as far as calling the head of an organization and putting their thumb on the scale when it comes to whether it's the World Cup or smaller. I mean, this is obviously the biggest world sporting event, but Olympics, other football clubs, this just feels, and maybe it's my short memory, but this feels unprecedented. And I don't know how, I mean, the real karma will be is if we lose tonight, which, knock on wood, I don't want to put that in the world, out in the universe. But it definitely won't feel as good had we had just won without him. But again, it was a terrible call. So conflicted. But actually, tomorrow, the owner of Moran's, which is one of the clubs, not the clubs, it's one of the bars that has been hosting outdoor events and having hundreds, if not thousands, of people, he's going to join us tomorrow. So I'm sure he'll have some thoughts, too. We'll talk more about this tomorrow. But thank you for letting me know how you feel about it. And that has been our show today. Steve will be back tomorrow. And news is next.